Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of What's in the Box, where we talk about what we're playing in Cube and what you should be playing in yours. As always, I'm Quad Nines here with my co-host, Zakiel from Merfolk Magic.
What's going on, everybody?
So, whenever you're hearing this, we're recording at Modern Masters 2015. Came out over the weekend. The GP is fast approaching, so we just thought we'd talk about some things involving that.
Yeah, Modern Masters is a super awesome set. I remember when the first one came out, everyone was pumped. You know, we had our Goyf, we had all of the sweet random old cards that were so expensive at the time, and now we get the sequel. So let's I'm very excited to talk about this. So starting it off, we have actually you have a physical Modern Masters pack with you, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I do. I actually opened up a couple boxes the other day. Those videos should be up soon, but I have a single pack that I grabbed. It was out of a newly opened box, so there's no resale shenanigans, as we've kind of heard. But yeah, the little pull tabs, the pull tab's kind of interesting. But, it's not as powerful as a cube pack, but, let's see what we have. Let's see, we've got Kozilek's Predator.
Very nice.
Blinding Soul Eater. Guess I can just go through them and then I'll kind of put some of them aside and see what you think. Vapor Snag.
I really like Vapor Snag. Yeah, card is so good.
It goes in the decks I like to build a lot of times. So. What was it? Tarashi's Grasp. The destroy target artifact enchantment gain life.
Mm-hmm.
Scuttling Death.
Nice.
I think LSV was talking about this is one of his favorite cards out of the set because he used to like Champion's Block and Soul Shift and a lot of cool things you can do with that. This is one of my favorite cards back in the day, Stoic Rebuttal. Make your own counterspell.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the Metalcraft. Rapping Flames. Oh, Vines of Vastwood, which was
nice.
I was happy to see reprinted at Common.
Nice.
Sphere of the Suns. Gust Skimmer, which is, but, I have no idea how to pronounce this one, but Novigian Sages, blue six drop that's like got graph four.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first uncommon. Second uncommon is Selesnya Sanctuary, the bounce lands, which are a little bit of debate in cube, but I think they're probably pretty good in this set.
Mm-hmm.
Aether Cast Knight. The Exalted 2-drop, blue-white, and the rare Edge Champion.
Nice. The the poster card.
Yeah, it is. I like the new art, actually.
I like the new art a lot better, actually, than the original.
And the foil would be good in a sealed pool with this, because it's Corp Homunculus.
Sweet.
Artifact creature. So, yeah, this would be great in a sealed pool. I'd have a Metalcraft deck just right out of the box.
Awesome. So, talking about that, going back to the uncommons and Selesnya Sanctuary, what do you think about the bounce lands in Limited? Because I haven't actually had too many, really chances to play with them other than, like, occasionally in EDH and stuff like that. But do you think, are they good? Like you were saying, good enough for Cube. I know, do you still run them?
I don't run them because I love land destruction. Because I'm a bad person, but like I've got all the I've got the Stone Rain, I had Pillage, I think I took it out. I had Stone Rain, I've got Avalanche Riders, just a fair amount of land destruction, Plowunder, stuff like that. Which I think there was debate about Plowunder on Twitter earlier in the week, but anyway, in original Ravnica block, they're insane. Like you could, if you got three bounce lands, you could run seriously 15 lands, and it's just no problem. And you can play whatever you wanted, it was like drawing a card almost.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the card advantage that it builds is you don't notice it until you're playing with it, I guess you said. It's hard to think about until you've played with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think in this set they're gonna be great. They're gonna allow you, if you just have one color of the two, you can just play it. So like I said, it allows you to, if you get three, maybe four, you can cut a land from your deck, just having two. You can still color fix a lot better, but it's I don't know. The card advantage is really good when there's not cheap and abundant land destruction. So I think in this set they'll be really, really good. And Cube, it just depends on your taste for land destruction.
Yeah, nice. I completely agree. Like I said, very excited. I did open a couple packs of Modern Masters. I haven't had, my store actually almost sold out of everything immediately, but I was able to snag a couple of packs, and I got like a Fulminator Mage and some other, like a couple of random other cards, but yeah, the set, set's pretty good. What have you opened? You said you opened two boxes. What did you get?
Let me see, the sweetest card, I did open a Goyf in the second box. I was happy about that. I got the three main cards. I got one Tarmogoyf, Goyf, one Dark Confidant, one Vendian Click. I opened up a full Mythic, opened up a full Primetime, got a full Spellskite, a couple of Cryptic Commands, a couple of Wiltleaf Lead, which I didn't have any of them. That card's, you know, randomly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Cube, I opened up a full Wildfire, and I like the art, because it's the art from Portal, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a full one of those, so it's pretty sweet. I think that's better. I do like the new Vendilion Click art. I might be one of the few people, but I really like it.
Yeah, I can't decide between the three arts. I don't know what order it's in. Like when I first saw it, I was like, "Oh, this is sweet." And then I went, kind of got off of it. I was like, "Oh, this is bad." And then now I'm really, really coming back. I don't like the Judge foil one, actually.
I don't either. I don't know why.
I think it's for me, it's just the color, because the foil is like part of the picture, mm-hmm. like a grayish blue color. The original is obviously very cool, but I'm not sold. I mean, I don't know.
I like the new one because the green and the red kind of pop out in it. And I don't know. I like all the arts, but the Judge probably is my least favorite.
Yeah. So sweet.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to drafting some Modern Masters online. You know, because I usually get my drafting on Magic Online. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some blue-green graft. Looks like it might be my cup of tea from what I've been hearing from people.
Nice. So, yeah, this set is awesome. You know, we've been asking for it probably every year since Modern Masters within the past 2 years, obviously. I guess just in a replacement for Conspiracy, which I actually liked as a set. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, we finally have it and it's almost too good to be true in a way, and it's awesome. And the set, a lot of people complain about the set that it could have been better, but I'm just happy that at least that we got something, right? Obviously, you know, we can pick and choose things that could have been done differently, but we got another printing of Goyf. We got, once again, our sweet cards, Vendilion Click and Dark Confidant on TCG Player, are both below $40. I never thought I would ever see the day where Dark Confidant is $35 on TCG Player.
It's funny, back when I started in Mirrodin Besieged block, it was like a $30 card.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, "That's like one of the best cards ever printed. How is it only $30? So I got my playset. I've had the same playset. Like, I picked up more and traded them away, but I've had that same playset put together just for a deck, like, since then, just because, you know, and the card's been all the way up, you know, like, what, around 80, I think it was?
Yeah, I think it went up to, like, 80, 85.
Yeah, it didn't see as much play, but, you know, it comes in and out of favor, but
yeah.
I think with the banning of Treasure Cruise, it's probably a little bit more in favor in Modern now, but mm-hmm. I still really love it in a cube deck. I like, you know, you have to pick it early a lot of times, but,
mm-hmm.
like, I'll run Blightsteel Colossus in my Bob deck, I don't care.
Yeah,
vintage, I'll do it.
and that's kind of brings me to something that's really funny, like transitioning from how like Modern Masters kind of affects Cube. It's really interesting to hear stuff like that, because when I draft, sometimes people will say Dark Confidant and Tarmogoyf, these cards are just terrible in Cube, and I'm thinking, like, you just have no idea what you're doing.
Like, you know, granted, like, Tarmogoyf isn't as good in like, you can't insert it into any green cube deck, and it'd be as good as it is, like, in Rugdelver in Legacy, because, you know, you don't have 8 to 10 fetch lands and, you know, 4 brainstorms and all this, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, still, it's not that hard to build a deck where it's a 4-5 for 2.
Yeah, well, and I feel like the biggest thing is Tarmogoyf was never played in a green deck. He's never been a straight mono green.
Yeah, you're right. Creature. He's the bluest green card.
Yeah, so yeah. when you pick Tarmogoyf, you're going to be playing it in a blue green deck, in a Jund deck, in a anything, you know, a rock black green deck where you're actually, you know, making the card better. I think that's just some of the common mistakes with that. And once again, with Dark Confidant, you don't pick Dark Confidant and just put it into your black reanimator deck. The Grizzlebrand's just going to kill you. Like,
yeah.
It's I think both of those cards are very easy to overlook, but they're still excellent cards. Like, it's they both in cube are just still ridiculous.
Is there any other cards besides those two you can think of that kind of get a bad rap at first? I'm like, everybody talks about this card, but I don't see it.
I think maybe the other side. I'm just looking over the spoiler right now, and Cryptic Command, I think, is a type of card that a lot of people will try to jam in their deck, and it's probably not the best decision. But
the number of islands you need to play is rather high. So. I don't have a problem with that. I usually play 12 islands anyway. But, yeah, you can't, like, that's not a splash card at all. Or even like a if you're running 9 and 8, you probably won't be able to get away with it. Mm-hmm. You know, not consistent. So. But another card I feel that gets kind of a bad rap is something like a Balance, which is like clearly, you know, a powerful card. I mean, it's banned in tons of formats, but, you know, you have to kind of build your deck around it. Like I've said it before, I wound up telling stories more than once, but, you know, the last cube draft, like every game I played, I won the coin toss, and I'm like, I'll be on the draw. And they're like, they looked at me really funny, and then game two, they'd get it, because they realized that, oh, yeah, he wants to be a land behind, so he can bounce away my lands. I mean, you know, little stuff like that that, you know,
yeah,
you kind of have to think about to make the card good. You can't just jam this broken card into any deck and it work like you want it to.
That reminds me a lot of Land Tax.
Yes, same thing.
Yeah. Land Tax, I think, is a card, once again, that you pick it up, it's like, why would I ever want to miss a land drop? Or, like, why would I want to be behind? This isn't good, until you realize that this card is nuts.
Like, you're drawing three cards and thinning your deck out, so your actual draw step is gas. Like, only the most aggressive decks can come back from, like, two land tax activations.
Yeah, it's nuts. So, let's talk about Modern Masters. So, you know, what were you most excited about when you saw the spoiler? And I don't know, like, let's talk about it. What about Modern Masters are you most excited for, and what cards are you glad that you can get your hands on now that were not as easy as before?
Well, let me see. There's a couple fools, like I said, like the Wildfire Fool, which I was glad to pick that up. But, like, just cards like All It's Dust,
mm-hmm.
It's, you know, they're just not as easy to find because it wasn't a super open set. The Eldrazi, like Kozilek, had never been reprinted before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ulamog was in it from the vault. Nimco had a promo, but Kozilek was really hard to find compared to the other two, really. I thought a lot of the mythics, I think they got right, like Elish Norn. I kind of wanted to do the whole Praetor cycle because I thought that some of the other ones were getting kind of high, but I see them just doing her because she is the most played one, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about it before the cast, but the reprinting of Kiki Jiki, I kind of had to scratch my head at.
Yeah, I'm not sold on that.
And then, like, they probably could have made Splinter Twin
have a target.
Yeah, or I'm sure they might be reprinting Goblin Guide and something else, but I'd much rather have had Goblin Guide at Mythic and not have it at all and have Kiki Jiki again at Mythic. I'm like,
well, do you think Goblin Guide may be in Battle for Zendikar?
If they bring back there, land? Yeah, I mean, you know, they printed it in an event deck back in, I think, the beginning of Mirrored and Besieged block, because mm-hmm. it was still labeled then. And you got two in that deck. So I wouldn't see them not putting in, like, some kind of event deck. Or not event deck, but dual deck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you don't get one, but, you know, that'd be pretty insane. It's like a, you know, $30 card. You know, they throw one of those in the dual deck and, you know, you buy them all you find.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they don't have to have much of any value past that. They could easily fit it into Zendikar, but it's got the land. It doesn't have a landfall trigger, but it's got a land matters ability.
Mm-hmm.
So if they, you know, like in Return to Ravnica, you know, they kind of tweaked a lot of the guild mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of them were very close to the previous ones, and you know, they could do something like that where they have a land matters mechanic, but it's not landfall. So Goblin Guide would go very easily in that set, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think the one that I was the card that I was most excited for was probably Noble Hierarch, mm-hmm. and it angers me that this card was like $60 or something. That's
they should have banned Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah,
that card wasn't impressive at all.
but yeah, it was. I'm really glad that Noble Hierarch is falling down. It's around the $30, like 30. Look, right now in TCG is between 30 and 35. Yeah. After GP Vegas with that, you know, the insane amount of packs they're going to be opened, I'm sure it's going to fall probably within the mid-20s, probably stay there. I wouldn't chance to see it below that. But I'm really excited because, once again, Noble Hierarch is a card that is played in Modern, played in Legacy, in Infect, played in, you know, like the Abzan decks. It's just so good. I mean, just have never been able to get one because they've been $60. I'm like, the day I spend $60 for a mana elf, it better be the Judge Foil. So,
I was lucky. I picked up the Judge Foil back when it was the regular one, I think, was maybe 25.
Yeah.
And then they banned Deathrite Shaman. I'm like, I feel great now. So I sold all my regular ones off. I'm like, they'll have to reprint this thing. So,
yeah.
Whether it's 5 years down the road, whatever. But
yeah, the Judge Foil is at like $90.
Yeah. Well, they did three things right. One was reprint. Second was it was at rare, and third was they kept the original art because
yeah.
I really like the art on that. It looks good and full. But yeah, that was the big one. What was the other big full they reprinted? It's not really a cube card, but Hercule's Recall.
Oh,
I was glad to see them have another full printing of that. There's one in my local shop that's like, I think they got it for 50.
Yeah, I was gonna say I feel like that card was like $40 or $50.
Oh, the I think the only previous full was like 120.
Jeez.
And now the full for Modern Masters is like 50, so that's, you know, it's still a lot, but that's pretty good.
That's pretty good, yeah. I remember seeing on the high-end Facebook group a couple of months ago, Japanese foil ones were like $1,200 apiece. I was like,
yeah, vintage oof. Players would be crazy.
And then once again, we finally got Bitter Blossom. You know, that card I think was sitting too high for a long time without seeing any play just because...
It had the spike when it got unbanned.
Yeah, I got the spike, and it's from it was from Morning. No, it was from Lorwyn.
It was that
or Eventide. One that block. I don't remember.
Yeah, that block. Morningtide. Yeah, I think it was Morningtide. I can think of it.
So it's a little bit less open set, but now we have, you know, Bitter Blossom, and I'm sure this really. I think Bitter Blossom is probably a $15 card, $15 to $20. Sitting at 30 without seeing any play anywhere doesn't make any sense to me. But I'm excited though. You know, it's an awesome card. Once again, like you said, we got our Eldrazi back. Always nice to see Emrakul not at whatever crazy price it was, $40 or $50. And also the first time that Kozilek has been reprinted, like you said, so.
And you know, there was a lot of just kind of random, cube cards that you don't see a lot of play outside that, like stuff like Kami of Ancient Law. I know some people play that as their, you know, creature artifact or enchantment removal on the stick.
Mm-hmm.
You got another reprinting of Lightning Bolt, another full copy of it. You've got just, you know, Rampant Growth. It's a bunch of like, you know, good all around cards that common and uncommon that haven't been printed in, you know, 3 or 4 years.
So mm-hmm.
People just starting out their cube, it's going to make it a lot easier for them to find these. You know, very important cards that just.
I think this is probably the best time within the last 5 years to start a cube, because you have right now. If you were to start today, you have Shocklands and Fetchlands. Half of the Fetchlands are easily accessible. You can get an entire cycle, I think, for like $50 of each.
Mm-hmm.
You have Modern Masters cards, which are insanely cheap. You have a bunch of staples and a bunch of cube staples that are pretty efficient within the past 2 years, such as Goblin Rabble Master, Courser of Krufix, Banishing Light, Song of the Dryads, Reclamation Sage, you know, a bunch of value cards that have been printed within the past couple of years for pennies, and mm-hmm. you have Modern Masters, so you can pick up you know, Fulminator Mage for $15 or, you know, your Spellskites for $15 or even Primetime at 10.
So, or even stuff like, you know, your Mystic Snake, your Shadow Mage Infiltrator, your Neutralize, discards that are gold, that are hard, you know, that weren't printed a whole lot, even though they're time shifted. Or, you know, Electrolyze, it was been printed two or three times, but it always seems to creep back up to that $3-4 range.
Oh, yeah. And then also, like, Thoughtseize from Theros is still cheap. Mm-hmm. Bunch of sweet stuff. So, you know, and then once again, Lightning Bolt. You can pick up a Lightning Bolt. I think Lightning Bolt was, like, creeping up to, like, $3 or $4, if I'm not
wrong. $3 or
$4,
yeah.
So,
very nice. That's the regular old M versions. Like, if you want to get something, like, sweet, they're really up there. So
I was actually a little disappointed they didn't change the art, to be honest.
I think that's kind of the art they're going to go with, unless they have some kind of, like, judge or,
yeah,
you know, something special.
I wanted them to bring back maybe one of the original, like one of the older ones in new frame. That would have been pretty sick, but I mean, I'm not complaining at all.
There, you know, there's a couple, some people that play Pauper Cubes. What was it? Sign of the Wild got bumped from rare all the way down to common.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty big for them. You got just a lot of rarity shifts in sets like these do affect, you know, different cubes. So that's...
Yeah. And then Smash to Smithereens also is sweet.
That needed a reprint. That was insane for a common.
Yeah. I'm pumped. You know, part of me, I have this fascination with, like, having the exact token for any token producer in my cube. I have, like, I have a holiday gift box full of tokens. And I'm really, really excited that... I mean, I was really happy in Commander that we got more Wormcoil tokens, but now we have the actual proper Bitter Blossom token is really nice. That's just my own thing, but it's sweet. I'm really, really pumped for that.
Oh, it bothers me a lot. I think the only time, like, I don't care is, like, if it's any kind of 1/1, I'll bring out my McQuack's Duck Soldier tokens. Just because I have three, so Elspeth makes those usually.
But, nice.
Yeah, usually, like, I want to have the right kind of zombie token or the goblin token or whatever, but the fairy token kind of, like, that's the one I have, like, was blue-black because it's from Una, I think, from Modern Masters 1. So I'm glad just to have just the black one for Bitter Blossom now.
Mm-hmm. I have, I think the only token I don't use that's the right one, I think actually Elite Mortal sent me, if I'm not wrong, was the unglued goblin tokens.
Mm.
So instead of using goblins, I use it's an unglued goblin. It doesn't have any stats on it. It doesn't say 1/1 or anything, but it's just a full art sweet token that I really like. So that's it.
I think those old unglued tokens.
Oh yeah. So, once again, sweet set. On the flip side though, there are actually a lot of people are disappointed and calling this the worst best set ever because of packaging errors. I'm not sure if you've heard too much on Reddit. A bunch of people have been, you know, showing off, you know, making videos of their boxes where some people got... So in a Modern Masters pack, I'm sure everyone knows, but you get a foil in every pack. And there were several people who got one... Out of the 24 packs, 18 of them consisted of one foil common, the same common 18 times in one box. And then other people have got double foil mythics, and some people have got a mythic every pack, and some people have got scratched cards where they open up their, you know, their quote unquote near mint, you know, just unopened sealed booster pack and the cards are damaged. So this is a combination, I think, of obviously the new packaging. This is the first time they've ever done this. The quality control, a bunch of everything, but interesting stuff.
Well, you know, a lot of times the foreign cards will fetch a little bit more. I know they have Modern Masters in Japanese this time, and they've got the old school packaging, the regular full packaging. So I don't know if that's going to cause a little bit more discrepancy than it would normally, just because there'll be more near mint copies out there in Japanese. I have no way of knowing the numbers, but I do wish they'd go back to that rather fast, because it's... I think I have two boxes. I only had three or four bulls that were kind of even scratched at all, and they weren't good ones. But I was happy none of my good cards were not near mint out of the package.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just kind of a that's just a feel bad moment for everyone. Like opening, there was someone online that I think opened a foil Mox Opal and the back was just like messed up, and it's just, ugh, it's unfortunate. And a bunch of people have also been getting like the throwaway cards, like the print error cards that will say discard, or there'll be like a blank card. Just really random stuff. But I mean, if you're into misprints, I'm sure Modern Masters is going to have some crazy stuff. I don't know what, but I had some shifted cards or something are going to end up coming out in the next couple weeks. But yeah, so I, what do you think about, you know, the overall packaging? Like, I know that it shared the same box as the first Modern Masters, and I actually really liked the, when I first saw it, at least, the booster packs for Modern Masters 15, but, you said that they, would you, so you would prefer the original Japanese like packs?
Just because I know that there's less chance of them. I haven't opened many packs like that and having been damaged. Like, I've had a couple that have, like, crimps, whatever, mm-hmm. But I'm talking about, like, one out of, like, 200 packs. And in these, you know, I opened up a few in, like, the side of, like, two or three cards towards the middle. Mm-hmm. The front would be, like, you know, dinged on the side. Then, mm-hmm. like, as soon as I pull it out, I'm like, okay. But, you know, I do wish they'd go back to the old packaging. I kind of trust a little bit more that they seem to have it more down. And I know it's supposed to be recyclable packaging, but I cracked two boxes, and I hate to say it, I didn't recycle them. Because, didn't have any easy way to do it, and I guess I could have put in more effort, but, I mean, come on. I guess a lot of the shops, like, that draft, I can see them being able to recycle more, yeah. But... like, I think my local shop, I think they drafted three boxes worth last Friday, and I don't know if they did anything more than just throw them all in the garbage like they normally do. So, mm-hmm. Whatever they were supposed to be accomplishing with this new packaging, I don't think it's done what it's supposed to do. But,
Yeah, so.
Okay, so we had White Wolf 1, 2, 3 on our last episode. We decided we'd do a cube pack one, pick one using Cube Tutor, and we thought we'd use his cube. Got a good, very, very well done cube. And I've got a pack pulled up here. Let's see what you'd take from it here. Let me see. Got Sea Drino, Lone Missionary, Masticore, Misty Rainforest, Disenchant, Ingot Chewer, Tarmogoyf, talked about earlier, Dragon Lord Atarka, one of the new additions, Inferno Titan, Doomblade, Treetop Village, Dark Ritual, Bone Splitter, Dig Through Time, and Sulfuric Vortex.
Huh.
So... pretty balanced pack.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think there's a couple key cards for several decks there. Like, the last pick, Sulfuric Vortex, kind of makes me just want to jump into that. But, you know, interesting. I am not the kind of person who can play Masticore. And I've seen that card actually, like,
I'm not either. Games. I've seen it just dominate, and I'm just like, every time I play this, I just want to throw it. I don't know.
I can't play that card, but I think Sulfuric Vortex is probably the most, like, strict, kind of straightforward answer and easiest pick if you just want to do something really easy. Dig Through Time is not a bad first pick, I think.
That's the only, quote, blue card in the pack, so that's definitely cutting off pretty well. What do you think about something like Doomblade?
Doomblade's good. Doomblade's a solid first pick. I think any of those super efficient cards are pretty good. I'm not sure if I would go with the Dark Ritual.
I think I'd try and will that. I would, depending on what I take here, and then maybe, you know me, if the storm's open, snap up that Dark Ritual. Because mm-hmm. There's enough strong stuff in the pack, I think it would probably have a good chance of willing, you know, if it's something you could get into. If it wills, it's definitely a pretty good signal.
So this is actually interesting. Would you play Dark Ritual in a cube that doesn't support Storm? Because have you ever played it as a value card?
I do play it as a value card because, you know, that good old, you know, Dark Rit, Hypnotic Spectre or Liliana, you know, mm-hmm. or even Lifebane Zombie. I've done that before.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Ritual into Lifebane. I've also just played like, Dark Ritual into like Coalition Relic.
Yeah.
You know, that I mean, you're down a card, but you're ahead a lot, I feel. I feel a turn one Coalition Relic is worth a card. Just throwing a card away, basically, because then your mana's fixed. You're 1-2 turns ahead. You know, if you can wait a turn and then really go off on, like, turn three. So, I mean, Dark Ritual is kind of a value card, even without Storm. It's kind of like Yawgmoth's Will to me, although not quite as busted. But, you know, being able to play it without Storm and still getting value. Speaking of something you play with Yawgmoth's Will without Storm, what do you think about Misty Rainforest? Just first picking the fixing, kind of staying open, or just a pack you kind of want to stay in.
Yeah, Misty is solid as well. I think that because there wasn't too much blue in this pack, and Dig Through Time, I think Dig Through Time you could count on that tabling, in, depending on who you're drafting with, I feel like. it's not a card that's like super strong. It's a super strong card, but I don't think it's necessarily a first pick. But definitely, yeah, Misty is fine.
Well, it's a pretty good pack. Of course, you could take Tarmogoyf. You could take, I wouldn't be against taking something like, you know, Bone Splitter if you want to go an aggressive deck, but not Sulfuric Vortex. But, you know me, if I'm going aggressive, I'm probably going red.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, if you're going to play aggressive, I feel like you kind of want the. And especially because, just from background knowledge, I know this is a powered cube, so I don't think I'd want to take the Bone Splitter, knowing that there's probably just better equipment if you're going to try to be running like that, or running that plan, and give up, you know, either a fetch land or your Vortex or even a Dig Through Time or something. But yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm always curious. I'm gonna click the Vortex and see what happens. Okay, I think we've chosen wisely. The next pack had Chain Lightning in it and no other red cards.
Nice. So, that's sweet. That is, once again, a pack from White Wolf 123's Cube. If you did not listen to our previous episode, it was a community spotlight with him on it. It was awesome. We had a great time. We talked about how he kind of got into Cube. How he, you know, at this point in time, he has written several articles and it publishes set reviews for every Magic set that comes out. So he was an excellent guest and very glad to have him. So moving on here, our next topic is, edit this out. Hold on. Moving on, our next topic is limited environments or custom limited environments. So as opposed to a cube, many people just want to replicate something like Modern Masters draft environment or an Innistrad draft environment or even sometimes Conspiracy or Rise of the Eldrazi is another popular one. How would someone go about building a limited environment and what do you think is the biggest difference between, per se, building a cube?
Well, it's kind of the same idea. You're wanting to, take a draft that you like doing and cut down your costs. Like, you're not constantly buying packs or having to, keep up with standard or whatever. You just want to have this experience that you can replicate, but that has, it's not exactly the same, some variance. So, even if it's just kind of, you can get pack runs, like you can kind of get those down and try and replicate those. You can just, shuffle up your commons, put those aside, put three uncommons with it. You can play without rares. I've seen people do that. I think a lot of people did it with Conspiracy is the main one I've seen recently, but, it's just a lot of fun that you can have repeatedly. And it's a little bit cheaper than say, getting a full, powered or rare cube.
it'd be a lot cheaper.
yes. Not even going the full route, it's just cheaper. So, especially the box of Conspiracy cost you, I think, you can get them for under 100 now, so.
Yeah.
Seems good. I like doing stuff like that, especially if you have a good play group that enjoys it, but you still need to have it where it can be different every time, and I think a whole box will allow you to mix up the packs enough that you could probably do it.
Mm.
And like you said, Rise of Eldrazi, that's, you know, Triple Rise is the first or second best draft environments for a lot of people that they've ever played, even going back, you know, to what was the first draft, Mirage or something like that.
Mm.
And I've played both Innistrad and Rise, and it's tough to beat, really. There's so many different archetypes you could have, and a lot, the power level of the cards, and granted, they're not as high as even at some Pauper cubes, but they're, like, it seems balanced. It's a very well-balanced draft environment, which is, you know, in the end of the day, that's kind of what you're going for in Cube, is to have a very good draft environment where everything, you have a bunch of different avenues you can go down, but they all have a chance, you know. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of gameplay decisions and a lot of play.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do know for limited environments, a lot of the times people are going to... So, obviously, the difference is, as opposed to including Singleton, you're going to actually try to replicate that like pack opening feeling. So you're going to have a bunch of commons and then sometimes three uncommons and a rare. Sometimes people stack it. Sometimes they'll just have it. So the ratio is like that in the cube. So you could theoretically open a pack with 15 rares, but no one else did, kind of thing. Or no one else has opened a rare. So I feel like there's, you have to take that into consideration. But once again, both of those environments are so fun. And when you're recreating those, they're awesome. So as opposed to opening packs and having to open a new pack of Rise of the Eldrazi every time you draft is definitely much more cost efficient, like you were saying.
Yep.
So that's interesting stuff. The cube community, or even like, I guess, quote unquote, limited draft or limited environment community, I guess, would talk about. Just popular to kind of see the difference in opinions. Like, once again, in cube, there's already a difference in opinion on powered and pauper and peasant and all that stuff. But it's just really cool to see where people have taken this environment and taken this format. So very sweet.
Yeah, I've thought about making multiple cubes, doing something like that. Like, cause I've got, I don't know, probably three boxes worth of Modern Masters commons and uncommons sitting around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, minus like kitchen things and stuff like that that I've either traded away or put in decks. But, you know, like I said, it just depends on your play group and what you can get going.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of brings me to the next question that I actually had. Have you ever thought about... So you said you thought about opening or building a second cube. What kind of cube would you build, out of curiosity?
I think if I were going to sit down and build a completely separate cube, it would be a tribal cube.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, I know, like, for example, like, the dual decks, like the Elves versus Goblins, and I'm a big Merfolk fan. Probably not quite as big as you, obviously, but I do love some fish. And then, like, right recently, like, Wizards, I've got a Wizard EDH deck. Humans has been a big tribe here recently. Zombies, I mean, just the flavor. And you have a lot of different different avenues to go down doing that. You can have, like, the Human Wizards. I just built a Sig EDH deck that, like, they're all Merfolk except for two or three, and the ones that aren't Merfolk are Wizards. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of cross back and forth. So you could even be having the draft situation of cutting somebody out of the Wizard deck just by building your Merfolk deck.
Yeah.
You know, just stuff like that, just little interactions. And I like the tribal themes in Magic. So.
Yeah, I agree. I've also actually wanted to build a tribal cube. I think if I was to build a second one, and I'm not sure if I still think I may, by the end of the year, just build like a cheap pauper one while I'm continuing to finish and pimp out my actual bigger powered cube. I do like that aspect of like just being able to play tribal and just have a lot of fun. Pauper cubes, I think, serve a different purpose. When I pick up a draft, I feel like, I'm not going to say Pauper breeds more creativity, but I think many Pauper cubes are more difficult to play and easier to play at the same time. It's hard to explain.
Yeah, I can get what you're saying on that. Yeah.
Like it's the cards are very straightforward, but the complexity in which you can build your deck, I think, is higher. Because in a powered cube, it's like, okay, I have Stoneforge, I have two swords and a Jitae and a Batterskull, and then I have the backup Storm combo and over the top Natural Order. Like, just easy, just stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But in a Pauper cube, it's like, okay, I have Knight or Peasant Pauper cube, I have Nighthawk, Sengir Vampire, you know, on all these cards, like, which ones do I want to put out vulnerable to Bolt? Or, like, it's, I don't know. Interesting. You still have to think about the same thing, but they're more important. Like, your more important cards are less impactful to the game. But, interesting. I don't know. In Pauper, I mean. Or in Powered.
Yeah. A friend of mine, one of the people that he drafts my cube just about every time it gets drafted, he's got a common uncommon cube. And to be honest, he probably spends a lot more time on his.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, because he has to be a little bit more creative with it sometimes. But like he'll get a lot of little neat interactions, like he'll just swap stuff around and make sure it works out. Stuff like that, so.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. There are even times, and you know, I find this very often with my own playgroup, is there will be times where we just don't want to play the powered environment. So there's times we just take out all the power. Like, I don't want to, just not really feeling it right now. All right. Whoop. Take out the power, and then sometimes if we really are bored, take out some swords and just play like that. Like, play a different style of magic. And once again, that's the option you have when you have your own limited environment. You know, you don't need to, just because you play a powered cube doesn't mean every single draft has to have power in it. Like, you play whatever you guys want to play, so. Just having that nice balance of that is really interesting.
Yeah, I think mixing it up like that keeps it fresh and, you know, keeps you from getting bored nearly as easy.
So. All right, so
do you have any major pickups on the horizon or alters you're trying to get done or anything like that?
I do have a couple alters. I have working on getting an alter done by Eric Klug. That's going to hopefully be the Taj Mahal. That'll be City of Brass.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually do – I'm building a new deck. I'm going to be building a legacy deck for GP Seattle. GP Seattle is in the first week of November, so it's actually coming up pretty soon for somebody who doesn't have almost any of the cards starting a new deck, which is going to be lands. My biggest pickups for the summer are hopefully going to be Tabernacle and then Ports and Wastelands. It's quite a bit of money, but hopefully have that done by maybe September and then pick up all the other stuff, which will be a bit easier to find. The reason I chose lands was because, for one, I do run Tabernacle in my cube, but I don't actually have a physical copy. Still use a proxy. Lands is kind of – it's a different style of deck. Like, you're not trying to kill your opponent in the, like, you can kill them with the Marriott Liege token with Dark Teps and Thespian Stage, and you can do stuff like that. But more importantly, I think it's like blocking your opponent out in ways that they can't do anything. Like, you can play Glacial Chasm, so they can't deal you any damage. They could have you completely dead on board, but they just can't attack you. The same thing could be said with, locking them out with Tabernacle, Wasteland, and Rashad and Port. You know, it's almost a prison style deck, but it's very unique. So I kind of just wanted to have something different. You know, I played Merfolk for probably a year. I, even tried out a couple of the Delver decks and just felt so repetitive to me. Like, okay, you know, turn one Delver, flip off a Force or Stifle or whatever it is, whatever's in favor at the current time. Boring. But Lands has a very interesting matchup against almost every single deck. There are times where you're going to be turn one crop rotationing for a Tabernacle if you're playing against elves, because they can easily kill you on turn two if they have the right hand. There are times in which you don't even need your Tabernacle and you're just, like, once again, you know, locking them out with Port and Wasteland, or you're using Mana Bond and, you know, playing all your cards into play and casting Gamble to intentionally discard a land that you need, or intentionally discarding a Life from the Loam to get the engine going again. Just fun stuff like that. So that's going to be my middle mini project, along with picking up all my other magic stuff. So GP Seattle, I will be playing lands in the legacy event. So pretty pumped.
Now, you're talking about killing them with,
Marriott Liege Dark Depths?
Dark Depths. Yeah. Are there any man lands that get run in that deck usually?
No.
Anything like Factory or anything like that?
Okay. You can play Factories and you can play Mutavaults. It's a different style of deck. I think that's more like the Land Still deck, which will play Standstill and Mishra's Workshop, or Mishra's Factory and Mutavault. Mm-hmm. But the Land deck that I like a bit more, there's three versions. There's that, there's the 35 Land deck, and then there's also Jund Depths, which is going to be playing a little bit more interactive game with Liliana and Abrupt Decay and stuff like that. But we're going to go all the way land, so.
Sounds like fun. You meeting up with anybody there?
Brian Rowe from Mythic MTG Tech I know will be playing. I'm sure I'll probably meet up with him, maybe film an interview or something while I'm there. I still don't have a completely finished Vintage deck, otherwise I'd plan for that. But there'll be a bunch of people. Probably going to go up with my friends, play in the event, you know, do some side drafts, hang out. Should be fun time.
Oh, if you get any cube action, make sure you get some footage of that. That'd be
definitely
good.
Definitely. I will definitely do that. And I also have a couple sweet pickup videos coming this week with some of the alters that I've got in the past. Because I've been almost like just away from YouTube for probably like 4 or 5 months for the most part. But yeah, you know, getting back in the gram now that it's summertime. Everybody's a little bit more free. You can have some more time to do whatever you want. So. Been able to focus a bit more on Magic.
We were talking earlier about picking up cards and stuff getting reprinted. How it's probably the best time to be starting a cube. As far as like rotation goes, do you have any like time frames? Like, what's the best time to try and pick something up? Is it right after it rotates? Is it right before the new set?
I usually say probably it's either going to be immediately when it falls, because there's going to be people at your local card shop that are going to just want to get rid of their deck as fast as they can. And if you have the capital to just buy decks whole or to buy cards just with straight cash, you can get a good deal that way. But for the general market, it's probably going to dip down about in October. After a lot of the cards, they're falling off now. And then they'll may pick up slightly and then fall off directly after the new set comes out in November. Because there's always those like random cards that'll spike within the last core set, you know, like the last 2 months of their legal and standard kind of thing. But yeah, exactly. I usually try to pick up rotation cards around October after the following fall set comes out. So
yeah. I've still got all the full temples on my radar. I've got probably half of them, but the other ones I'm like, I'll just wait because they're not playing anything really right now. So
yeah.
That's definitely the...
I've seen a couple, maybe like one here and there, and like Splinter Twin sometimes plays one, stuff like that, Blue Eye Control, but not enough to justify any like major increases.
Do you see anything big in the new set? Anything you're pulling for?
I think in Battle for Zendikar, we're actually going to get man lands. I don't think we're going to get fetch lands anymore. I was thinking about it. I think fetch lands are something that Wizards of the Coast can easily just put on the burner and hold. Because there really is no need to, like, we already did it. We've been doing it since Modern has been created up until this past year that you can realistically play with 5 fetch lands. So there isn't any proof that we can't play with the 5 that we just got in addition to the ones that were previously played. So if you're playing Modern, that yes, your deck will probably be a little bit less optimal, but you know, the difference in where we were 2 years ago to where we are now is not as big for newer players. Like, you can still build almost any competitive deck with the 5 fetch lands that were in cons. But I do think we're probably going to get the other man lands.
You think they're going to bring enemy colored man lands?
I think so.
I wonder what they would do. That's going to be interesting. I had a thought that they were either going to, you know, have the, because the fetches from Zendikar are the enemy colored ones, I thought they might bring back the allied colored man lands in the first set, and then in the second set of the block, possibly bring back like Scalding Tarn and all that. So all 10 fetch lands would be in standard the least amount of time possible.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'd love that, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that'll happen, but that if they do it, I think that's the only way they can conceivably do it. And I don't think having all 10 will increase like shuffling time.
No, I don't think that's.
You're not running any more than like 10.
Yeah, I don't think that's a big deal at all.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it doesn't matter. Like, you can suffer for 3 months for the overall health of the game. Like, but yeah, I like I've said, I would welcome Fetchlands. It'd be amazing, you know, getting fetch lands back again. But, you know, I think that Wizard, you know, even with the reluctancy of printing cards like Goblin Guide or even cards like Seer and Visions, they want to have something to be able to reprint, because they can only make so many Modern Masters until, you know, Kiki Jiki's $4, right?
And then it still won't see any play.
But so yeah, interesting stuff. I do think that they're for the. I would bet on them not reprinting fetch lands and just holding them though, just to print in another 5 years to create some hype.
Yeah, I think they've got laid out a little bit more than what we know. Obviously, like I don't know if they planned it to begin with to not have Serum Visions in Modern Masters and then to put it as F&M promo, or if they you know were going to print and they're like, oh wait, Serum Visions isn't in here. I guess we need to do something with that, so they just made an F&M promo. Because mm-hmm. like,
and what do you think about that promo?
I like it.
Really?
It's not the best art. I like the old art better, but for an, I mean, I've seen much worse F&M promos. Like,
that's the problem.
Was it?
You have to say that? It's so bad.
I mean, you got stuff like the Experiment 1. You remember that promo? That was horrible. Like, for example, I like the original Kitchen Finks better than the F&M promo. But for hand, I like the F&M.
Murderous Red Cap?
Well, no, I was going to say F&M Bloodbraid Elf.
Oh, well, that's infinitely better.
Yeah, like when I see Bloodbraid Elf in my head, that's the art I see. Now, this new one, I haven't seen it in my hand. Like, a lot of times, if a full hit catches the light right, it looks much better than it does, like, on the screen. But, and I mean, it makes me think of what the card does, but if they went with the old art, I'd been fine. So, but over not getting one at all, I'm glad that we got one, but...
That's true. I mean, as much as I complain, that's the bottom line, right?
Yeah, it's art I'll put up with, and it's okay, but it's not great.
So bad. I think it's just garbage.
I was like, this is terrible. This is so bad.
Honestly, on the other hand, the new Path art, I hate it.
It's okay.
I hate it, and I hated the swords to timeshares.
I don't like that either.
But like then you got stuff like the Judge Krakus art. Don't care. It's fine. It's good. But
Judge Krakus is. I don't know which one I like better. They're just like the same thing, pretty much.
Yeah, the old art is like blurrier, and you know they're.
But it has the old frame though.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't actually like. I'm not a fan of the Judge promo Wasteland. That special art?
The new one or the other one?
The first Judge promo one. Not the player reward. Not the player rewards one.
Yeah, no, the first one, the one they used for Magic Online, I don't like it. Now the newer one, I like it. I like it better than the older Judge, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It goes original art, newest art, and then the middle one. So
I still think the original is probably the best though.
Yes.
I like Crucible of Worlds, but something about the Judge promo Crucible just looks kind of weird to me. I don't know. Like, the borders just seem really big. I don't know. That's just my own petty
opinion. Oh, slight pet peeve question. If you're playing with a Modern Masters Dark Confidant, do you ever refer to it as Bob?
I guess you could call him Skrillex, but.
Yeah, Skrillex. I don't, like, somebody says something about, well, Finkel's in the set. And I'm like, no, they've got a Shadow Mage Infiltrator. That's not Finkel. Didn't look anything like him.
What do you think about that?
I do like the art. I'm sorry. I like it. I don't like it as much as the old art, but they could put it on some other blue-black card.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I think the actual art, the picture, is good. It kind of describes the card, really. But I'd rather have the old art for any invitational card. That's kind of my motto. It's like, Besides Solemn, I think every invitational card would have been fine keeping the old art forever.
I agree.
Like Meddling Mage, like Chris Pekulia is not an old an old black woman, and that's like, just so funny that they changed it. That's like really drastic. And then what is it, Sylvan Safekeeper, like the new art on it, I'm like,
that card's just terrible.
Well, that's a bad card anyway. I say bad. It's very, very
unplayable. Niche.
Yeah, it's like you'd have to build a deck in which you would need that for EDH, and that is it. So, of course, they can always Snapcaster Mage, and I doubt that card gets reprinted other than like a Judge Foil, and they'll probably use the same art.
Yeah.
So,
I'm not sure what I'm not sure how I feel about that, because like you said, I think Solemn is the best example, because the new Solemn, I think, is infinitely better than the old one. I don't like the old one at all.
Well, you know, they're trying to make a golem, and they're trying to put your face on it, so it's kind of hard to do, I guess. But, like, the M12 art, I like it a lot. I don't...
It's sweet.
And the foil looks much better, because it has color in it, whereas the old one's just, like, this green, grayish robot.
Still, I don't know what was really going on there, but...
Yeah. The card's sweet, though. I mean, it draws cards and puts land
on. No, yeah, card's fantastic. It's staple, but...
Yeah.
So, what do you think about that? Just promos in general. Do you think that... Like, so, for example, I'm looking right now at the Ugin promo. Do you think that they should have done that? Like, or do you think the Ugin, they should have just had one art?
No, I mean, I get what they were doing, because they were doing it with all the other, the double art, the Ugin fates. Like, this is, can be this way, and it can be this way, depending on what happens back in the past, and I get that. But, like, that card itself, the big problem was there really was a hard way. It was almost impossible to get them.
Yeah.
Up front, and then after that, the price just went so high so fast. Like, there wasn't that, I mean, I think you got probably one of the last reasonably priced copies in existence.
Yeah.
And, like, the window to get one was just so small.
I bought mine for 80, or, like, I think it was 80, after shipping, it was, like, $93 or something.
Yeah.
Something, I was like, okay, done. I was filming a video on YouTube about Ugin, like, on TCG Player, like, screenshot video, and I refreshed the page, and it was, like, $80. I was like, all right, well, I'll be right back. So, it's just a little unfortunate, but yeah, I mean, collective value or collectible value.
I think I put a question out on Twitter too. You know, I think you're in there with it, but like much of the cube people, like if you're a original art versus full versus like promo. Like I had a couple of examples. I think one example was Lightning Bolt.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the beta. Lightning Bolts. Now, granted, if you get a Judge full that has the beta art, but it's full, you know, that's okay. That's neither here nor there. But, like, what was the other card I specifically put in there? I can't remember.
I think I like that kind of thing. I like the Judge Foil OG art Bolt. I like the Judge Foil, well, it's the first FNM promo Swords, like that old beta art Swords.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only good foil one, I think, actually. I'm not afraid. Like the Bo Jackson one's okay.
Yeah, I like that. The only thing was the From the Vault one. I got one of those, obviously, because that's From the Vault. But like the conspiracy foiling process is just so much better.
I have given up completely on From the Vault. I can't stand the I still have an FTV top that I don't want. I just don't. If you need an FTV top, I have one for trade. But I do not like. I can't do it. The cards just feel weird and they warp. I'll have them in, just sitting, I'll have them in my binder and I'll pull them out. I'm like, why is it like this?
Yeah.
I'll get them out of the box. They'll come out of the box warped. Like, ugh.
Like I picked up a full Aether Vial and a full Vedalken Shackles, and I got the Shackles of Modern Masters and From the Vault Aether Vial. And, like, I got them both in, like, on the same day from Puka Trade, and it's like, these should be the same, and they're not.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, anyway. But, yeah, hopefully they'll get better on that. I don't think it'll happen, but I don't know. Hopefully they'll print good enough cards in the front of the vault where I'll have actually something to care about instead of, like, what was it, Realms. I don't think I cared anything about that one.
Yeah.
There's Mazavith, which I don't even have in the queue, which I wish I did.
But. What Mazavith art do you like the most?
None of them. I like the Eric Klug altar. This everybody's seen, you know, the just the infinite staircase type deal.
Yeah.
But I like the Judge one a lot.
I cannot agree more with you with that statement.
Yeah, I mean, when I see Mazavith, my head, I actually see his altar. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I just relate it to that so much, but the Judge one, I guess. I don't like the dark. Was it dark? Yeah, dark. I don't like the dark art, like Carmen at all.
I can't.
It's like this big glob of nothing.
Weird. I'm gonna get the, cause I want my lands deck to be, I want all original art. So I want like all of them to be super old. I just want the deck to look like old. That's it. But, so yeah, Tabernacle, I'm gonna use the OG maze, but it just looks so bad.
I just get one altered, you know.
But you gotta get four. The deck runs three, I think.
Ooh. Yeah, right. Ah, oh, come on, you can do it.
So, I don't know. I think there's interesting stuff like that in Cube and just kind of preference and stuff. With that said...
You threw me off. You're talking about running four or something. I'm like, four? Why do I need four or something?
What do you think about, like, the continuation of the San Diego Comic-Con cards?
I don't have any of them, actually, and... I want some of them sometimes, but then just the price and I don't know. It's like if they keep doing it, I'd like them to make them more accessible, but same time that drops the value of them later. And I like the whole black with a little bit of color thrown in, but they're just so hard to read sometimes.
No, I have one. I have the Nani because I played it in, I was building some EDH deck that I wanted one. And there are times just like, okay, this is cool, but I have no idea what the hell this does.
A buddy of mine's got the new Garrick in his Sultai EDH deck, and like if I didn't know what that card did, I'd have to pick it up every time he plays it.
Yeah.
Because it's just like you cannot read anything on it. You can see like his axe coming out of the border, and you're like, okay, I guess that's what that card is.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I've actually played that before, and because of the my local card shop has very serious players, and we just have, you know, the EDH players, and people just think they're proxies. I'm like, no, this is actually a real card. No, I'm serious. This is actually a real card. But, there's only one that I really want, and that's the 2013 Chandra Pyromaster.
Yeah.
Which just happens to be the most expensive, of course, but.
Of course. Actually, the one I want is the, I want the Nissa, actually.
The Nissa's cool. I like the Nissa a lot, too. I thought the 2014 promos, other than Nissa, I thought were really bad.
I don't like the Chandra. I don't like the new Chandra compared to the old one at all.
I think the Jace looks kind of weird. And it's a terrible Jace.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, I thought it would see some play when, like, Delve was a thing.
Nope.
Because like it helps you delve and like it balances things and it I guess does I mean I've seen it played like three times
yeah and,
at all I've seen the
card
it
is so
three times.
Bad
yeah and it'd be different if it's three mana it'd be borderline really good
no
but
yeah.
At four you're like this is not architect thought this is not this is
I'd rather even, honestly
I'd rather have five player. Mana well I'd rather have five mana Memory Adept in my sideboard, you know, because at least when it's good, it's really good, you know. So,
yeah.
Now, that's the other one I'd like is the 2013, which I get in 14, but the Jace Memory Adept, I do like that Comic-Con one.
Yeah.
It looks pretty good. But neither one of the Liliana's worth. I don't like them at all.
No, they're terrible. What about Book Jace?
Book Jace I will never own just because I look at it and I'm like, it's a Jace book, Bellin. You know, it's Baby Jace.
Yeah.
And I've got a Lorwyn full, and I'm like, it's cool, but it's not, you know, 120? Is that
what it is? GCG Median is 183.
Oh, gosh. It's 183. Okay, I was thinking it was less than the Ugin promo, but, I mean, I've seen a few. I know people that have them, but it's just, other than just saying, oh, look, I've got this really rare card, it's not my favorite art, and it's not full. So.
Yeah. I can't decide which one I want. Like, part of me wants to get. See, this is we're like rambling at this point, but it's okay. part of me wants to get my promo Ugin altered as like a full art altar, and the same thing with Jace Beleren. But it's kind of like, do I really want to do that? I don't know.
Well, I think if you just get like an extension,
yeah,
and pretty much keep the art. I think that's fine because that's the whole reason to get that Ugin is one, it's rare, and two, the art is infinitely better.
Yeah.
Like, I picked up the full because I got it, like, the guy was at the shop taking in, like, giving me, like, 75% trade at a store. And I'm like, sure, here, take this. And, you know.
That's pretty nuts. Seven, yeah.
Because he was closing up, like, in a month. So he just wanted to, like, be able to make some back and
take off the bigger stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think about what art on Mana Crypt do you like better?
Because
I actually like the original one, but the judge promo was not bad.
The judge promo just looks. It looks like a powerful card. Like the old one looks like it could be one of those cards from, you know, Antiquities that actually does nothing.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
No, I completely agree with you.
Like I like the art, but just with the old border, it's a brown card and it just looks so drab, I guess. I mean, that's
sure.
Simplifying it, but I'd like the old art, but I prefer the full because I don't know, just it's a crypt and you know, it's just I don't know.
Yeah.
It just screams more powerful card to me, I guess.
I like it.
Conversely, I definitely like the old like alpha or beta soul ring much more than even the judge full.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the art's, I think the art's the same, isn't it?
It's the same, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then of course you got like the FTV/commander art. Which is okay.
It's okay, but it's just so boring.
Yeah, like if you get one of those and you really have to alter it. You just have to. And it's been done so many times, I'm like, yeah. So I'm gonna break down and get a beta soul ring for the cube eventually.
I can't decide. I think that's another one that I need to pick up soon, is soul ring. I don't have one. Like I have the crap ones, but I don't have like a sick one.
Yeah, I picked up a From the Vault one from an ADH deck that I was trying to pull out all that could be full, and I was like, well, besides Force of Will, I'm like, I'm not paying something for Force of Will.
Yeah, I've got
worse art, so.
Yeah, I've gone back off that. I've seen one before. Someone at my, local shop has a, he's big into like pimping. He plays vintage and everything, and I'm not even sure what he does, but, he has one of them, and they're okay. I mean, they look really nice, but something about the iconic, like, you pull out you throw the blue card on the table and then put one to the side, and you see this, like, explosion of red paint art. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's really nice. I can't bring myself to also spend $700 on a Force of Will.
Yeah, like,
that just,
spending I think 70 to $100 on a Force of Will is like, okay, that's fine. That's
yeah. Fair.
But, I mean, it's just... And my judge friend, he had a playset. You know, he gets in a playset because he's like certified a billion judges in our area in the last couple of years. And he was at a GP and he's like, you're buying them for how much?
Yeah.
Okay. I think he got like $6 or $6.50 cash for each of them.
It's insane.
Yes. And he's like, okay, that's like my rent and pays off my car. So like deal. So, I don't, and there's just like alternately though, I would, if I had $700 to spend on a Magic card, I would get the Phyrexian Elesh Norn.
Yeah, I was literally about to say that actually. I think if I was to buy the Judge promo I'm most excited for, there's two. I want to buy an Elesh Norn, and my shop still has foil Gaia's Cradles at 300.
For real?
Yeah. Okay. And, a TCG player, there's one available for $397.
Huh.
So.
I guess I need to. I've spent an insane amount of money the last month on Magic cards. Like, I added it up and I just stopped. I was like, but I've got to get Modern Masters boxes here soon. And I'm just going to stop because I don't even want to know.
Yeah.
And then I got thinking, it's like, oh yeah, I actually threatened my friend that if he sold or traded his Ravages of War to anybody else, that he'd be dead to me. And now I'm like, I'm going to have to actually come up with that money. We'll go like TCG mid, maybe take a little bit off, so it's in between that and like what he can get from a dealer or somebody.
Yeah.
But still, like it's still going to be a couple hundred bucks. I'm like, okay, I guess I need to start saving up for that. That's not nothing. But I'm excited about that. I'm going to get a Ravager War by the time summer's over, so that's good.
Yeah, that's sick. I want to try to get one eventually, but I'm glad. I don't know which one I want. I'm big into P3K. I really like white border, like rarity stuff like that.
Yeah. What's the one-eyed guy that's the general that...
Zhong Zhao, the tyrant?
Yeah, he wrecks everybody.
Guy's $400.
Yeah. Now that card, I would get that in P3K. I think that's about the only... There's only like one other version of it, is that right?
I don't even know.
Anyway, like, you know, I can see getting that card, but... the Ravages of War are paying, what was it, like $500-$600?
Yeah, they dropped down now to $350 on TCG.
Yeah, but like when is it, five or six?
No, they were huge. They were.
I'm like, for a white border that does the same thing as Armageddon, why can't they reprint this?
I'm never going to buy Imperial Seal at this point. Like,
oh no, it'd just be suicide.
It's like, not. You know, it's just not.
Eventually,
yeah. That's the problem. Is if this card was on the reserve list, maybe I could justify it. Like maybe in a couple of years after I finish Power. But there's no way I'm buying a worse Vampiric Tutor.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not even sure if this is even like, is Imperial Seal even part of like the ideal cube list?
No. It's, just, it's like you play it in the EDH deck that needs an extra tutor and just say, look what I've got.
Exactly. It's
don't you wish you had one of these. But.
You can play Imperial Seal in a cube deck, but I don't even know, if it's good.
No, it's not. I mean, it's like, Grim Tutor. Like, it's not as much, and it does about the same thing. That's another card that I'm like, why is this card super expensive? Like, it's not as good as Vampiric Tutor. Not as good as Demonic Tutor.
Stupid Starter 99 stuff.
Yeah.
Same with that Goblin Settler. It's like $55 now or something.
Oh, man, I've got like 12 of those. Oh, wait, that's Magic Online. Never mind.
From Vintage Masters, yeah.
Yes. That card is sick, though. It's just like kill ass.
Yeah, Near Mint, $70 TCG. Wow. It's insane. But yeah, I actually know someone who has them. I'm going to try to get that off of them. Mm. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah. So as usual, we've degenerated into rambling about random expensive cards, but you know that's kind of what we do sometimes. So,
Are there any cards? I'm trying to think. Actually, I'm gonna say this. I've been looking at vintage trends recently within the past 2 years, which is why I decided to snap by the Lotus that I bought. Mm-hmm. I bought it for, I think I paid $1,300 cash and $400 in trade, and now it's worth I think like $3,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the next card to explode in value is Mishra's Workshop, because Workshop is huge. It's playable in any any casual format. It's a four of in Vintage as a tier one deck. It's if you have a Workshop in EDH is just stupid banned. Like, it's just stupid busted.
Yeah, I thought it was banned until we started talking about it, like 2-3 weeks ago. I'm like, wait, that's not banned.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Just nobody has it. Yeah.
But no, that card. Well, the other thing is, from this, like, because of the growth of Magic, I'm sure you saw the Vice documentary.
I heard about it. Didn't see it actually.
It's pretty good. I think it's about like a half an hour. I made a video probably about 6 months ago talking about the growth of Magic and how it's going to affect the market. Mm-hmm. And when you, like, because Magic is growing in popularity, and now I guess you could say, quote unquote, it's becoming more mainstream, and there's going to be a movie that's coming out. We have a Vice documentary. Like, you're starting to see events in newspapers. I'm sure Grand Prix Vegas will be, on Reddit or something. It's going to be, I mean, it's equivalent to San Diego Comic-Con, not to the same extent, but still very large. And, you know, with this increased interest, you have people who have motives other than playing. And one of the reasons Volcanic Island spiked last year is that there was supposedly at Eternal Weekend, someone bought out every Volcanic Island at the entire event. Now, this is very easy to do with Arabian Nights cards or with Antiquities cards or, with all of these. These are actual legitimate investments. And people would argue that stocks are safer, but, I mean, in certain markets, this is actually just in every way a better investment than a stock.
Yeah. I tell you, the guy that I envy a lot is Open Boosters, because he just found so much of that stuff that he had that he thought he lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like what people were trying to do is, like, buy a bunch of stuff, put it away and not open it. But most people can't because, it's hard to resist opening stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't because he didn't know he had it. And then he found it again. He's like, oh, I've got all this stuff. And he sold a bunch of it off to pay for, bills and, sure. life. And then he's like, got all the rest of it to open up. And he's like,
still opening what booster packs today.
Yeah, what he has unopened is a pretty good percentage of the unopened stuff left.
I bet.
And he's got stuff like Antiquities and, Arabian Nights and Beta. I mean, like that, every time he opens a piece of power, it's just like almost not a boom, but you know, it's a pretty big jolt for the.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
The supply. I mean, because you know, like, oh, there's one more piece and it's playable, but like pretty soon the last one of those is going to get opened. You know, pretty soon, and all the reserve list stuff, you know, is probably where you need to stick your money if you're looking to invest in Cube/Eternal stuff.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you really want to go and play Magic for a long period of time, I think that is really the way to do it. Getting away from Standard for like maybe 2 years and just pushing everything you have into Eternal formats. Cause we're going to have Modern Masters 2017 or 2018 again. Like you're going to be able to pick up your Noble Hierarchs and your Goyfs. They're never going to have Vintage Masters in paper. At least under the current legal circumstances, they never will. It's really interesting. I think it's, you know, definitely something to think about if you're really, really invested financially and time-wise and emotionally in the game, because there's a chance now. I mean, and once again, you have the boom to the many people who were playing when they were kids now are coming back with, you know, in their 30s with jobs after going to school and have, you know, good careers, and they can actually afford to do this.
And they have, like, their kids. They're getting their kids into it.
Exactly. Like, It's a big deal, and Mishra's Workshop has, you know, there was one at my shop last year for $300, and I was like, it was a little, I mean, it was played, but it was $300, and I was like, I'll wait a bit, and then, you know, later, I'll wait a bit, and then, of course, it's gone one day, same with the Tabernacle that was also there, and, I mean, now when Mishra's Workshop is like $600, it's ridiculous.
Well, that I feel the same way about, Time Walk. Like, I think it was GP Nashville early or mid last year. I sent Lengthy Zimmet a bunch of stuff, just a bunch of stuff for him to, you know, trade in and like so he could have for volume. And you know, it's a lot of, you know, $10-$20 cards, a lot of $5 cards in bulk. And I got a Tundra and I got a regular guy's Cradle and a couple of fulls, like full Thran Dynamo, stuff like that. But there was I think a Time Walk there that if I did, you know, could have, you know, just PayPal'd him a little bit of cash, like $50, I could have got that instead. And of course then, you know, I think maybe 3 months later it triples.
I thought it was like the next month, because didn't Elite Mortal get his Ancestral that day?
Yeah, that's right. I guess it was probably within a couple weeks that everything just went crazy on power and, you know, just the really old reserve cards. And granted, that Tundra's went up some since then, but not that extent. I mean, it went from, I think that Time Walk was going to be $550 maybe, something like that. And it played, insane. But like now the same grade would probably be $1,100, $1,200, I guess.
Yeah.
And a really good ones go for like $14, $15 maybe.
Yeah. You can still snag some pieces of power on like ABU games and stuff like that for like, underneath the grand, I've seen a couple for like seven or eight, but I mean, I don't see those lasting for very much longer, to be honest.
Well, I'll catch stuff on like the high end Facebook page is going to be the death of me.
Yeah.
You
can get very good deals, actually.
Oh, yeah, they're great deals. That's the problem. I feel like, I'm going to offend some people, but I feel like somebody that's went shoe shopping that doesn't need shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was on sale. I'm like,
yeah.
That's what I tell myself, and I'm like, oh wait, I didn't really, you know, I don't need any Magic cards, but like I just went crazy like probably 2 weeks ago on there, because like I wanted a price on these on two cards, and the guy I was going to get one or the other, and he quoted me a price for both, and I'm like, oh, well I guess I need to get that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I bought an unlimited Tundra a couple months back, I didn't even need one. Say, oh, this is a good deal. All right, let's do it.
I can't be really mad because, like you said, it's like pretty safe place to put your money, you know. But like, at the same time, I'm never going to get rid of it, so I don't know why I'm saying that.
Yeah.
That's
one of the things you have to understand about like reserve list cards is the difference between alpha and beta print runs and like Antiquities, Arabian Nights, and you know all that is so much smaller than revised. So dual lands are still incredible investments, but that they're still nothing compared to like a workshop or a candelabra or a bazaar. I mean, even Bizarre, actually, I think is probably the worst of those because it's only good in if you really want to like set up around it. But you know, even in Legends, like Angus McKenzie, that card will be like $100 and probably within a year or so.
Yeah, pretty glad I've got one of those. It's
just,
graded.
Yeah, just stuff like that. Mana Drain, I'm sure. I mean, Mana Drain has seen gains. You used to be able to get them for like 110. Now they're up to like 200. Caracas is up to 160.
Well, that library is an uncommon. And it's 500.
Yeah.
Or Ford 500. Depends where you go. But yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I bought my library for 180.
I wish I had one I could play with.
Yeah. It's definitely played, but 180. So I was happy. But yeah, then there's like there's the weird Legends cards like Moat and Chains of Metastopheles and...
Oh, Chains. I could have got
Invoke
one of those.
Prejudice and like none of these cards. Nether Void. Like, we don't need these. Chains is actually surprisingly playable, but the other cards...
Yeah. Like Nether Void, I've seen it played in Cube, but like it's so...
That's just...
It's like so much money to put in your Cube for a deck that like one out of five times somebody might draft.
Yeah.
You know. Like the Abyss is a good bit better, and it still doesn't come together that often.
Yeah. Man, I need a Mana Drain. I need everything.
I've got a Mana Drain, so.
Tabernacle, I think, it's going to be my next one. I want to go Tabernacle. End of the year, I want to have Tabernacle, Workshop, and another piece of power.
Well, I've kind of reached the point, at least on my cube, like I can pick them up like to have, but like for my cube... There's not really any cards I can pick up that I can put in without putting in actual all the power.
Yeah.
Like, I could put in a library, that'd be okay, I suppose.
Yeah, but you just, certain cards, yeah, well, it's just certain stuff like that. Like, you can't include, like, a powered environment is not just powered. It's also, like, you have to have, it's having high, like, power level cards that are so high, they shouldn't be in unpowered cubes. And we talked about this in the last episode with White Wolf, is there sometimes you really shouldn't be playing Sol Ring in an unpowered cube, but if you want to play it anyway, but just for power and balance reasons, like you really should be playing power.
Well, it's like, I've got Sol Ring, I've got Mana Crypt, I've got Mana Drain, you know, it's not the same level, but like balance, like Yawgmoth Will. Now I've got like your vintage level power stuff. But not the mocks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So. And at the same time, like, my blue section seems crazy more powerful than all the other ones, and I don't have Time Walk and Ancestral. So, like, if I add all the power, like, how much better does blue get?
Yeah.
Like, the other colors don't get anything.
Yeah,
besides, like, maybe, like, Mox Ruby for the red deck, I guess. That, I mean, because they need the red banner symbols, but even then, that's just not, that doesn't even matter.
Go whenever you are ready.
Okay, so the cast up to this point was recorded pre-GP Vegas. We've had some time since then, and we wanted to add a few things to this particular cast since it's, you know, based around Modern Masters. And, of course, one of the biggest things from the GP was Goifgate. And I kind of want to get Zakil's point of view and kind of express my opinion. I'm sure y'all may be tired of hearing about it, but we haven't told you what we think. Yeah, we hope, you know, our opinion counts too. So what was your big takeaway from it, Zakil?
So I'm sure we don't really need to. We'll have a quick rundown, of course, in the top eight. You know, a guy took on camera a feature or a foil Goyf, and people were mad. Pros like Owen Turnwall and Reduke were upset and lashed at him on Twitter for, you know, taking money over, you know, playability. And, you know, for the most part, apart from the actual, like, incident, I was more upset by, like, the pros' reactions because, like, Reed Duke is one of the people, I think, who kind of got me more into competitive Magic because I've only been playing for 3 or 4 years. And to see him at Worlds with his Hexproof deck, like, the way he played and how he was announcing his triggers and playing was, like, literally the exact way, like, you should be playing. It was completely perfect. And every time I've ever seen him on, you know, something like on Channel Fireball on their draft videos or on, you know, on Twitch or whatever it is, he's, you know, seems like a cool guy. I saw him at Grand Prix Portland, said what's up to him. It was nice. But I was just really disappointed to see like that. Like, that's just childish to me at that point. Like, he's in, this guy is in the top eight. So in my opinion, he's done better than, you know, of course he's done better than what, almost 5,000 people already. And to see so many people upset with him because he took a card that is, you know, that was going to help his financial situation is a bit kind of unnecessary, I think, especially since the majority of pros are compensated or salaried one way or another by, you know, appearance fees or sponsorships or whatever it is. You know, they get some money for going to Grand Prix. I know Pascal Maynard, I think he was like an amateur professional, saying that from like he's prominent but has not like hit the huge scene yet.
Yeah, like he does, you know, he does stuff for Channel Fireball, but it's not like he like makes his entire income off the magic. There's
no
very few people that do.
You know? Yeah, and you know, and those guys, I think, especially to see that from those people, like Owen Turnwald and Reed Duke are in such a position in which they can live completely off of that for the most part, off of magic. To see them, you know, backlash off of somebody was just really distasteful, in my opinion. I think. What do you think?
Well, I'm. You know, I actually came to Magic, I've said this before, but I came to Magic because after I had kids, I couldn't play poker like I used to. Like, I used to go to casinos all the time, go play in tournaments, all, you know, in the surrounding states. I'd been to Vegas and Reno and all that. And in poker, which is, you know, a lot like Magic, the difference is you keep score by who has the most money or, you know, value or, you know, most chips, whatever you want to say. And, like, I completely understood it because, like, he basically guaranteed that instead of getting eighth place money, which is like, I think, $1,000, he was, you know, getting that, if you just go on strictly the retail value of the Goyf, which was like, I think, $400 or $500 at the time,
yeah,
he was basically guaranteeing to get at least fourth place money. So he's like winning, that's like worth a match if yeah, you just go on the money that they're getting. And he'd already gotten it, like if you top eight a GP that big, you automatically get a PT invite. So yeah, that was already taken care of. Like, it's not like he was going to lose that if he didn't win at least one game. And he won around anyway. Like, he made it to top four. And I'm pretty sure that a Burst Lightning doesn't help him in that match when he gets beat by Lucas. He got beat like 2-0. And like, I don't think a Burst Lightning wins him that match. Like, there's no way it does.
Yeah.
And, you know, even not taking into account the absurd amount of money that it brought, it was giving him, value. Like, he was just taking the value. I thought it was funny that I didn't see, you know, obviously like Eric Froelich and David Williams, like the poker player, Magic players that, you know, came from Magic, went to poker, now they're playing Magic more now. But they didn't see anything wrong with it that I know of because they know it's about the value sometimes. Now, like, they don't need the value as much as maybe Pascal does, but, you know, they understand it a lot more probably.
Well, and the other thing is like, think of it this way. What if that same person was a kid who, you know, just happened to have, you know, just on a hot streak for the entire tournament, or someone who necessarily is there for fun but mm-hmm, doesn't have any intention of really going to the Pro Tour or something? Are you going to criticize them?
Well, like, I don't think that would have happened. I think the deal is that Pascal is enough of a pro. Like you said, you hear his name, he top eights, GPs. Like, this isn't his first one, I don't believe. And he's, you know, been on the Pro Tour multiple times. So everybody knows his name. That's in all the pros know his name. They know who he is. So some of the guys like Reed, you know, I guess they just expected him to do what they would have done. And they say they would have taken the Burst Lightning, so good for them. But I can't look down on the guy for taking the guaranteed, you know,
$500,
yeah, 500, you know, the value play. And like, even, you know, Marshall Sutcliffe on Limited Resources, you know, this was a limited top eight and he's one of the bigger spikes, you know, you'll see. I've seen him like draft something and then not have a reason to play it. And like, I'd get greedy. I'd splash for it. That's me. like, he'll put it in a sideboard. He's like, no, I'm going to win. But at the same time, I've seen him go, well, this, he's playing a Magic Online, of course. He's like, oh, that card's worth, you know, seven tickets. Click. Because, yeah, like, that's exactly half the draft. You know, and granted, this is a one-time draft. Like, you pay your entry fee and you get your prizes. And there's nothing after the fact. Like, there's no pro points or invites or any of that stuff. But, like, even he read drafts. And he I don't think he was on coverage. And, you know, he was kind of surprised he took it, but he didn't, you know, talk down about it. He's like, okay, you know, sure, you know, sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah, but, I mean, anyway, it's entertaining. I thought it was awesome. Like,
yeah,
oh my gosh, this had to be planted. Like, this had to be on camera, like, to open a foil of Tarmogoyf. And it's just sweet. And I don't know. I was just really confused and a bit. And this goes on, you know, this goes on bigger than just we're pointing out Reed Duke and Owen Turnwall and those guys, and it's not just those people that I think are the most upset. I've heard this from people in my local card shop. I've heard this from other YouTubers. I've heard this from people on Reddit all over the place that, you know, that's the exact opposite people. And I was, you know, the opposite thing he should have done. And I was outraged.
Yeah.
Why? Like, just relax. Like, I don't know. Well, I understand the point, but is the problem that the that he took a $500 card over the Burst Lightning, or is the problem that there's a $500 card in Modern Masters?
That there's two big points there. Let me give this quote. One guy said, who was it? It was one of the pros. He said, so you're telling me you would pay $500 for me to put a Burst Lightning in your draft deck? That's what you're saying. You'd pay $500 to put a Burst Lightning in your draft deck. Nobody would do that. That's insane. That's basically what you're doing when you take the Burst Lightning over the Goyf.
Yep.
So, okay, but the two big things are, like you said, that there's a $500 card in Modern that you can open and have the choice of that. There probably shouldn't be cards that expensive in Modern, especially since they reprinted twice. The second bigger problem is, and I talked with Mythic MTG Tech, Brian Rowe, another YouTuber we were talking about. I talked to him about it some too, and the big problem is that there's not enough prize support for these huge tournaments.
Yeah.
The fact that you know, because there's a real cost incurred to go to these, like not just like, yeah, it's like, I think it's like $75 to enter in with the main event. But like, you know, you're going to Vegas, you're probably taking off work, you've got a hotel, you got travel fees. You know,
well, a hotel in Vegas is not cheap either.
No, I mean, even if like you're a gambler, which, you know, some Magic players are, you know, you might get a comp or a reduced rate, but you're still spending, you know, hundreds of dollars on hotel fees, and then you got travel, like if you had to fly.
Yep.
You know, if you came from Canada, oh my gosh, I feel sorry for you because your plane tickets are insane from what I hear. But it's the fact that the price payout was so minuscule that he had to consider this. You know, yep. if the first place is, you know, I don't know, if it's remotely equivalent to like a poker tournament or even like a League of Legends tournament, you know, the high-end League of Legends tournaments, he doesn't take it. He takes the better card probably because, you know, there's probably 20,000 or 30,000 for first place as opposed to four.
Yeah.
Is it four? Three or four?
I'm not sure. Something.
Yeah, yeah, but it's under five. It's something pretty pitiful considering how many thousands of players was in this tournament.
Yeah, you got to think how much money they grossed from that tournament. And this is...
I'm sorry to cut you off. I did hear because my buddy judged that tournament. He was out there. And he was saying that one reason that, like, Fireball probably didn't make as much off of it as people may think because they had so many people there that they had to rent like the extra space in the center. Like they had to like move the wall and rent space that they hadn't rented before. And like for the 3 days, it's something like 20 grand.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was cost to them, but I think, you know, WotC should get in on this. They should be helping out on prize support for their premier, you know, their GPs level events. Like it's just not, they're not doing enough for as big as it's gotten. And it may be a deal of it's been so big so fast that they can't adjust to it that much, but something needs to change pretty quick.
Well, they had planned. They had originally, they knew from the start that the Modern Masters GP was going to be huge. Otherwise, they wouldn't have put the option of splitting it into two tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, and that just begs, you know, the ethical issue of should judges be paid? And it can go really deep into that, which to be honest, I don't know enough about that whole, the judge program or the way,
Oh, no, I'm not talking about, like, the judges being paid. I'm talking about just the players.
No, I understand. What I'm saying is that this goes into the same thing of, you know, players should probably be – the tournaments should be more money. The prize support should be much bigger. But I think this also goes into, you know, for, you know, judges probably should be paid because they're running the exact tournament. They're paid in product, which is fine, but, you know, this brings in some ethical issues. And once again, I don't know – I just don't know enough about the topic to really speak on it. But it's just like, you know, this is a game has a pro tour. You know, you can be a professional player. It's, you know, you can live from being a professional player. You can stream, you can support yourself, you can do all these things. But, you know, the support from the actual company that's making the cards is sometimes not there. And it's just interesting. I don't know. Once again, I don't know too much about how the GP system works. Or like the prize payout system, and if there was more people, it'd be, you know, it'd be more money. I don't know, but I think that, you know, they need to adjust and realize because from what I heard from one of the pros is that price support hasn't adjusted with inflation, and it hasn't really changed in several years. Other than I think maybe once, you know, there was something small, but it's like, okay, you know, yeah, these things need to be looked at again, because once again, you have a $500 card in your, you know, in your format. Is that okay? Are you okay with that? And if you are, you should be able to defend that that choice from Wizards perspective. So interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of you know, feds. Is that about all you want to go into, the Goyf gate?
Sure. You know? I mean, like I said, I don't know. I unfortunately don't know enough, and this is a little bit after the fact. One thing is I understand, you know, anytime there's an event like this, you have to realize that a lot of players and people are emotionally charged. So I'm not – like I don't think that Reed, Duke or anything were bad people, but I was just caught off guard to see them publicly say that. And many of the pros, but, you know, I mean, they're people too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, like I said, I think this could all be helped. One, if, like, you know, the prices weren't so high on a couple cards. And two, if they would just be able to increase price support. Because there's some much, much smaller games out there that have infinitely better price support. And
Dota's International has, good lord, they're at almost $15 million for their yearly tournament. And that's less than, they have a smaller audience than Magic the Gathering does.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You know, as far as, you know, going to talk about value a little bit, I mean, you've been talking recently about some of the really sweet cubes on, like, the high-end Facebook page where somebody's, like, you know, breaking apart their cube, whether they are getting out of the game or just trying to go a different direction, whatever. But, you know, they're big investments, and it's kind of like almost like a savings account. You know, you can get together this great item of value, and then you kind of have it there. So, have you ever thought about that when you're putting together your cube?
Yeah, definitely. That's pretty much how I started. You know, why one of the reasons why I started a cube. I liked cubing, but I knew that I wanted to build a powered cube, and I knew that some point in my life, if I, you know, thought Magic was as serious as it was, I didn't have a problem buying a Black Lotus. So when I bought my Lotus, it was all intention of putting it in my cube. It's going to be in pretty good value or pretty good condition because I don't get to draft as often. And people in my, you know, my play group is like, doesn't, you know, abuse the cards. They don't throw them around or anything. So it's going to be in similar condition that I bought it. And if, you know, like I think you said before the cast, you know, in case of fire, break glass, you know, if I need to get the money, a lot of the cards in the cube can be sold very fast for a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah. So like, especially like, you know, we talk about getting alters done. Now they're more subjective, you know, what you say it's worth. You know, it may take a while to get the person that also thinks it's worth that, but you know, as far as like a foil or like a beta, you know, whatever, you know, there's definite, you know, pricing standards for those, and you can pretty much assume most of those cards that like they're going to go up in value over time.
Definitely.
So especially reserve list stuff. So.
Yeah. I think if you are in the more, if you're into the more, you know, kind of pimp, quote unquote, pimp side of Magic and you like the big, you know, the expensive Judge promos and Friday Night Magic promos and old border foils and random, you know, misprints and test prints and stuff like that, or then you get into alters, that is a market which I think is a lot easier to kind of, hold on, that's the word I'm looking for here.
Engage?
Yeah, I guess that's probably the word. Just to, you know, it's pretty much like there is a market that is there's always an indefinite purchase price. A definite purchase price, pardon me. I can take these cards up today. I don't have to wait for a buyer on eBay. I can take them and go to Star City Games right now and they'll pay me cash for them. I can take my Lotus. I can take all of my dual lands. I can take my Force of Wills. I can take all my foil Goyfs and all of that stuff, run to Channel Fireball and cash out immediately. As opposed to standard or as opposed to modern, where you can put it up on eBay, and even though they're going for 25, you may have to sell for 17 to get it to really sell. Mm-hmm. The same thing, you know, and that's something that, you know, regardless of what aspect of Magic, what format of Magic you're playing, if you have a collection of Magic and you're thinking about these kind of things, you have to realize that there are costs incurred to sell, and that time is very, very important, because if you have all of your cards and you put them up, you know, and nobody, you know, and even to the point if you're selling something such as an Alpha Lotus, there may be a price that only a certain amount of people can pay, and many people are interested, but they have to see it, or they have to, you know, you have to really, you know, show that you're an interest in selling this kind of stuff. But it's sweet. I really like it. It's a very comfortable way to do it. I, once again, I've been, I'm full in for this method. I have, once again, Lotus and all those crazy cards, having fun. I like Alters, like you were saying. Alters are a little bit more difficult to sell because they're a bit more subjective, but if you go with some of the more popular artists like Eric Klug or Marta Molina or something like that, you can off them pretty well. And, you know, there was, we saw someone selling a cube you see every couple months or years on Facebook, and he valued it at $75,000. And that was from a whole bunch of old reserve list cards, a whole bunch of old foils and Alters and all that stuff. And he pieced it off, and for the most part, the majority of it's gone within, you know, a week and a half. So it's interesting. And that's only, you know, that's with him having the $100 required purchase price. If he was to sell it off piece by piece, I'm sure he could sell it, you know, within another week.
Yeah, and it was some very sweet Alters on that one. I think I texted you after you sent me the link. I was like, I've like literally just thrown this 30 minutes away just looking at these Alters. I haven't really, I've just been here just looking at my phone 30 minutes scrolling, zooming in. Oh, that's great. And going back out and buying another one. So, you know, that's one of the things that kind of drew me to Cube originally was that you can customize it how you want it. And, but then like after I drafted the first couple times, I was like, I really want to make this mine. You know, I wanted to get the certain editions and, you know, full or, you know, if I want this certain art. So it really brought the customizable part of Cube to light for me.
Yeah, well, and that was one of the things. I wanted, you know, my Cube to be a representation of me, and I wanted drafting my Cube to be an experience because I don't get to draft very often because I'm fairly busy, unfortunately. But the times that I do get to draft, you know, I still like seeing that wow factor, the, you know, that shock value in drafters' faces or some of my friends. When you open up the pack of, like, you know, pack foil G-Tay next to a dual land, next to an altered, you know, him to Torok next to your favorite video game character in a sword or something like that. It's just really cool, and it makes the draft a lot more fun than just playing. Which, of course, is still awesome. You still get the same value, but it's just sweet. You know, I'm just really into that kind of stuff. And many of my drafters are as well.
It wasn't quite Cube because we couldn't I'd gotten some old packs from I had some store credit at Card Kingdom. So I got some old packs, including like a Urza Saga pack and like, what was it? It's like Nemesis and 10th edition and a bunch of like modern type stuff. But we had a Chaos draft, at my LGS the other day, and a couple of the guys were like having to read every card because they hadn't played in those sets. Yeah. And I hadn't really either, but I'd seen a lot of the cards, but, like even that was pretty fun, but it definitely made me wish. I was like, I just wish I'd brought my Cube and cracked these packs on my channel.
Yeah,
but it was a lot of fun. But it was just like some of the guys were like literally taking like minute and a half between picks. They're like, I don't know what this does. I don't know what this does.
Yeah, I remember when I was at Grand Prix Portland. We left the main event practice area where you like you had a play mat and you had to play in like the, this was an M15 GP, so you had to play in the M15 trial or whatever it was. And we left intentionally to go to a Chaos draft. They ran one that day. Of course, we all got like the worst packs. We got like Dragon's Maze, M15, like, and then one cool pack, like Avacyn Restored. I was like, oh, woo. But yeah. It's still awesome. Chaos draft is really cool. It reminds me a lot of Cube, like you were saying. And I think my deck, I ended up getting like a Temporal Mastery, and I was terrible, but Devil's Play and Temporal Mastery was my deck, and it was kind of, wow.
Yeah, we actually played in a pretty good one at GP Memphis, and they had a High Rollers Chaos draft the night before, but they didn't get the maximum amount of people, so they had a bunch of packs left over. So they like threw in a bunch of Cold Snap packs, a couple of Urza Saga packs. I think they had some, what else was it? Like four or five Future Sight packs they threw in it, and nice. It's just the regular fee, so I opened up a couple of Rise packs, which was pretty sweet. I got a Splinter Twin out of it, actually.
Nice. So, that's awesome.
And I think somebody opened up a full Thran Dynamo, and somebody opened up full Dark Depths.
Wow. So
they were quite happy.
That's money.
Yeah, it was. I was like, you want to get rid of that? He's like, nope. I'm like, dang it. I was like, I'll trade you for it. He's like, nope, keeping it. I'm like, dang. But one of the guys from my LGS was there with me, and he's like, you know, he's one of the better players. He's won a couple of the PTQs they've had. And, but he's also like insanely lucky. One of his packs was Dragon's Maze. And like, it was one of the packs that he wanted to draft instead of open for the sealed part. Cause it was a sealed, three packs of sealed, three packs of draft. And he opened up a Dragon's Maze pack and got four Voice Resurgence in it.
Wow.
And the other guy goes, like, only, his last name's Kai. He's like, only Kai can make Dragon's Maze value. How do you do this? And like, he passes the guy a Progenitor Mimic and the guy's eyes fall out of his head. He's like, what? And Kai just kind of just quickly flashes it to him. And the guy just like instantly like gets the salty look. He's like, really?
Yeah.
He gets that pack and I get the pack I got. Anyway, it was funny.
The guy I remember, when we're at the table, we're like messing with our packs. It's like, hey, I'll trade you a Dragon's Maze for, you know, well, not Dragon's Maze. That's a terrible example. Like, trade you Avacyn Restored for Scars or something like that. Yeah. And everyone's like, yeah, oh yeah, I'll do this. And nothing crazy, but I remember the guy in front of me ended up not trading away the new Phyrexia pack and opened Phyrexian Obliterator. And it was like, oh, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That's one of those cards that it's not technically in my cube now. It's in the own deck binder because I like the card. It's just like, it's so hard to play. Like, how do you play that card?
It's just not a cube card. Like, it's really good. It's really fun, but you just, like, that card just, I don't know.
Well, as we learned with our talk with Randy Buehler, it's like really hard to make mono black good. And you have to be mono black to play that card. But,
yeah.
Like, the last time it was in my cube, a guy first picked it and he forced mono black and everybody just passed him the nut mono black deck. Like, he had all the, like, hymns.
Oh, yeah.
He had him, Liliana, Thoughtseize. And he kept pitching Bloodgast with his Liliana. You know, he would play Obliterator. He'd play Obliterator on four like every game. And it's just like the magical Christmas land. But you know, any other time I've seen it drafted, it's in the sideboard because you just can't play it. But that's enough rant on that one, I guess. But I like the card. It's just like, why does it have to be quad black?
Yeah, it's just nuts.
Three for three that's got reach because she's got a bow and arrow or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not reach. Maybe she does damage to flyers and then she flips and like is some kind of elemental trample creating machine, kind of like the current version.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm really interested to see how they, you know, level out the power on the flip planeswalkers and if they're going to reprint any of the flip cards from Innistrad block since they're going to be doing two face cards.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to take that opportunity.
Delver
maybe. Huntmaster, you know. But, I mean, really, there's not a lot of played double-sided cards. There's two. Well, three if you count the Garrick. But he's not printed, I'm pretty sure.
No.
But, yeah, like, the only – I think there's what – yeah, I think I've got three or four double-sided cards in my cube. Delver, Huntmaster, Garrick Relentless.
Did you play your Reckless Waif?
Oh, I play Reckless Waif. Oh, and Bloodline Keeper.
Yeah.
Bloodline Keeper is pretty cool. I like it. But I mean, yeah. Now if they can come up with new two-sided cards that have some kind of flip mechanism besides the Planeswalkers, that'll be interesting. I want to see that. And I want to see what kind of mana fixing we're going to have. Because if they're going to come up with new lands or reprint old ones, or are filter lands coming back? Because I want to put filter lands in my cube, but they're pretty insane right now. And if they're going to be reprinted, I don't want to pick up, like, I think I'm missing three. I don't want to pick them up and then have them reprinted into like $10. So.
Yeah, I agree.
Cause I don't need them that bad, but I would like that. So
I do agree. I am looking forward to, like, Liliana seems insane. Like, that card seems sweet.
The Gideon. I'm really interested in seeing the Gideon.
I'm excited to see Gideon. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm curious if they're gonna. So they used the name Origins. Like, are we gonna see some like Juzon Jim-esque cards, like really old stuff? Where they like they bring back him to Turok?
Ooh,
I doubt it.
Oh my
gosh,
that'd be. So they're gonna have to bring like old good cards, but not legacy level cards. Cause, now something that would be cool to see reprinted, which I doubt
Wasteland?
They would. Dark Ritual. We talked about earlier. Like it's barely not modern legal. Counterspell. They're probably never going to give us Counterspell back, but it'd be cool if they did.
Yeah.
I would not say no to that.
No, I would not either. I really want him, but I just know it's not going to happen.
No, just, but thing is, I love the randomness of it. Like, it is so much more, it's more fair and less fair than Thoughtseize.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you're getting two cards, but, you know, it could be the two cards you don't care about. Whereas Thoughtseize, like, you know,
it
like
could also be both of their lands.
Yes, and see, they're talking about, oh, I don't want the unfun effect of not being able to play Magic. I'm like, it's fun for the person that casts him.
Yeah.
And you know what? It gets the game over with. You can go to the next game. You know, yeah. It's like when somebody, you know, goes off on turn two and, you know, or has show and tell on turn two and kills you with Imrakul or whatever.
I mean,
you know?
I've had the accidental thing of hemming someone and binning their Grizzlebrand. That wasn't fun at all, but.
Oh gosh, I was playing on Magic Online and I hemmed somebody. And I didn't know anybody played this card in Legacy, but they had a Loxodon Smiter come out at me.
Oh.
And I'm like, are you kidding? Really? So like he untaps on his turn two and he's got a 4/4 in play. And I'm like, great. Yeah. So.
Fair. I'm looking for that. Yeah, I'm excited for that stuff. I'm excited to see if they're going to... that's what I'm most excited for in Magic, is when they print a supplemental set to bring new cards or old cards into Modern. I want to see stuff, random stuff. Goblin Pile Driver would be cool.
So, now, I've heard, was it you that I talked to about that? That somebody had said that Goblin Pile Driver was being reprinted. Like, and this guy that they talked to, he's got an in with somebody, and everything he has said has been spot on. Like, he told him about Chandra Pyromaster, like, 6 months before it came out. Like, a couple years ago, he was right on about the fetch lands. He was right on about, what was it? I think that Sarkhan was going to be blue before they had the pin that showed that he had, like, the blue streak in his hair.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But he said that Goblin Pile Driver was on the list for Magic Origins.
I hope so. That card is sick.
Yes, it is. Can you imagine Goblin Pile Driver and Goblin Rival Master being in standard for 3 months?
That's just suicide.
But I would be so, like, I would play red in standard for that. I would play standard for that.
Yeah. Goblin, I mean, yeah. That'd be cool. Stuff like that. Like, that's what I'd be most excited for. And then also I want to see in the next year another red card that isn't devoted to burn. Another dual caster mage kind of card.
Something like Faith Excluding. Like, that card was really good.
Yeah.
And it's not your burn card. It's just, you know, red card advantage.
Yeah. Something like
card
that.
Disadvantage, but yeah. Some cube fodder. Yeah.
And where can they find that? This is their first time listening to the episode.
Oh, I'm a Quad Nines on YouTube. I do a lot of pack openings, which I know are kind of boring, but I talk a lot about cube. And I occasionally have some cube gameplay. I ramble about other things that I know not as much about, like EDH and Legacy and whatnot. But yeah, Quad Nines on YouTube, Quad Nines on Twitter. You can check me out there. I have some interesting posts from now and again.
Nice. I am Tequil. You can find me on youtube.com/merfolkmagic. I'm obviously a big fan of Merfolk. I do cube pickup videos. I do random streams where we'll cube the Legacy cube. I do all kinds of finance videos, whatever. So check that out. Hopefully by the time this airs, my newest episode will be out and have some fun. So also find me on Twitter at Zakeel Gordon. So that is our Modern Masters episode.
Definitely check back. Maybe the cube will come to Magic Online soon and we'll have something to complain about. So be on the lookout for that.
All right, guys. So thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.